Blog Talk Radio.
I've got a rocket in my pocket and a roll in my wall. Oh, baby, don't fudge me with a North 40 tone. There ain't nothing you can tell me I don't already know. I got a rocket in my pocket and I'm ready. I got a rocket in my pocket and the fuse is lit.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans, we are pioneers, we are the pathfinders. We settled the new world, we built the modern world, and we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Totally. Totally. Totally, 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 totally. James Bostic here with a conservative perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And let me tell you what, old dad is cruising tonight. I got a brand new HP. It's brand new. I had a Gateway 1, all-in-one desktop model for over 10 years. And it was an outstanding machine. I loved it. It was a workhorse. I wore it out. I had it worked on a dozen times, and that machine just kept trudging along. I mean, I was a soldier, and I was proud of it. But the time had come, and so we went on Amazon last week, and we ordered up a brand new HP, and it's got this big old 2-foot touchscreen, and man, it's just a monster. It's awesome, and it's good to be here with you. Again, the conservative perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network right here on Blog Talk Radio. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network. And that's Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a recorded version. And Mojo 5.0 .com, mojo50.com is the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, and we're proud to be moving through there. Well, our guest tonight for the first half hour of the program is a fellow by the name of Jerry Wayne, and you might not know that name, but I'm hoping this is the right clip. It should be. It's the only one I've got on here that says Biden full of it, and you guys probably know what I'm talking about. Jerry Wayne is the auto worker who was there at the, I think it was a Chrysler Fiat plant. He'll tell us here in a minute, in Michigan. And he's talking to Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden about, you know, Biden's serious problems with the Second Amendment. And we all know about that. I hope this is the right clip. I'm going to go ahead. We're going to play the clip, and then we're going to bring Mr. Wayne up with us. Let's see. I hope this is it.
I support the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. From the very beginning, I have a shotgun, I have a 20 gauge, a 12 gauge, my son's hunt. Guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapons. I'm not taking your gun away at all. You need 100 rounds. I did not say that. But the viral video, like the other ones, are putting out that they're saying they're lying.
That's enough. What cracks me up is about this whole thing is the fact that Joe Biden, of all people, is going to tell anybody that they're full of shit. Unbelievable. And we've got the man here with us, right? Let me pull him up here. This is Jerry Wayne. This is the guy that Joe Biden was. Jerry, welcome. I don't know what Joe was doing, but we're happy to have you on the program tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So tell me, I mean, there was a big crowd of guys around, and I'm sure, you know, there was a lot of your coworkers, and there were probably a lot of Biden handlers, because I got a feeling he probably keeps a few guys pretty busy there with the things he does and says. But what was that day? What was that day like before Joe got there? And you know, it seemed to me you got a legitimate question. The guy's after our guns. He doesn't make any bones about it. And then to turn around and just flat out deny that you know that's his motive was astonishing to me. But tell us about that day.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a misconception that I'm an auto worker. Actually, I'm a millwright by trade. I'm a skilled tradesman. I take that with some pride.
My apologies.
Yeah, I showed up at you're quite all right, man. It's kind of everybody's kind of saying it. It's no big deal. I showed up there at 7 o'clock, and they told us, hey, you know, Joe Biden's coming in at 9:30. So I didn't know this was going to happen the day before. So I spent a little bit of time gathering my thoughts and getting a question together, because I didn't know if I was going to have an opportunity to ask him a question, but I didn't want to be there and have the opportunity and not be prepared. So when we got up to that area, I had this apprentice with me. He's about 6'5", and I was like, hey, man, you got to make sure I get to the front, right? He was like, yes, sir, no problem. So he made sure I got to the front, and Joe Biden did his little speech, you know, his little razzle-dazzle, and started to shake hands with everybody. Well, he made it my way, and the video took over after that, man. The rest is history.
When you're trying to engage in a dialogue with the guy who is looking to be the chief executive of the nation, and
yes,
he looks at you and says that, what went through your mind when this crazy old man told you that?
Oh, as soon as he said that, you're full of, you know what, I just wanted to stay quiet, man. I think someone should have brought him a shovel because he was about to dig a hole.
when he said that, and I know, you know, you've got there, you know, you've got your guys there, and what did his people, how did they handle this? Because it was obvious, you know, that wasn't a very good copy, and I've heard better copies, but it was clear that he was really agitated. You know, you got under his skin with
these
questions, and it made him uncomfortable. How did his people?
I believe it was his campaign manager right next to him. She told him like, hey, let's keep moving on. And you saw in the video, he told her hush. And,
yeah.
And when he told her that, it was like, hey, he was going to be a loose cannon after that. She tried to stop him, and she didn't want to make a big deal with him. You know, she didn't want to make an altercation between them two. So she just let him go. And he was not prepared for that question whatsoever. You know, I think that he showed up just for a publicity stunt. You know, hey, I'm here for the unions. I'm going to wave my hand. You guys are going to go vote for me, and that's going to be it. You know, and I'm not very fond of someone just showing up like that for their 5 minutes and leaving and expect us to hand them over to presidency. That's not who I am, you know. And in that area of the people around me, most of the guys weren't for me for sure. They didn't want me to ask a question at all, let alone something that really stirred the pot. And I
right.
wasn't even trying to stir the pot. I'm just a regular American, you know, and I have questions. And he wants to be our leader, you know. I think that he needs to be able to answer these questions.
And this is a very serious question because, you know, there are a lot of Democrats, and this needs to be addressed, and there has to be an open and honest dialogue. I mean, the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment. It's been around for a long, long time. A lot of folks have tried to monkey with it, and they've never had a whole lot of success at it. And the Democrats really, you know, they're really sincere. And I think that we can take them at their word when a guy like Beto O'Rourke says he's coming to take your guns. If he gets the power and the authority, he's gonna try and do it. Now I don't know.
Well, that's what seems
probably,
like. Yeah.
It would be now. Don't get me wrong. It would be ill-advised because there's a lot of guys with guns out there. A lot of law-abiding citizens with guns out there, and
yes,
that
sir.
Might be something that they want to reconsider. But it astonishes me that the level of political discourse has come over the last 15 years, 16 years, has come down to this, to where, you know, a presidential candidate can't take the heat from a legitimate question, and the only thing they can think of to do is cuss the electorate.
Yeah, it kind of ripped the mask off the face there, you know. I think he showed his true colors in that moment. He wasn't prepared for it. You know, he goes on stage all the time, and he has his script ready to go. I mean, he didn't show up there with the script at all.
Well, Jerry, let me ask you this, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I'm not even remotely aware of your political position one way or another, but if you're a pro Second Amendment guy, I probably got a good idea. After this was over, and you know that the tension subsided, the moment's passed, and they've distracted him long enough to move him further down the line to shake some more hands and talk to some other folks. How were the folks around you? How did they feel about what had happened?
Well, at first they didn't like the fact they were trying to move me along. I'm sure you could see in the video they didn't want me
right.
You know, stirring any pots, you know. And I heard little birdies all day, you know, that people weren't too happy. And we gave it a little bit of time, and after a couple of days, people finally learned what my question was. And I came into work, and it was almost like I was a celebrity, you know. Everybody wanted to shake my hand. Everybody wanted to get a picture with me, and it was pretty cool. But that's happy. That makes me happy, you know, because a lot of people they're very black and white, you know. And I think that we're living in an era right now that's a very gray area, and we as Americans need to be able to ask these questions. And the fact that people noticed that, and the fact that they noticed that I wasn't there just to be, you know, an aggressor. You know, it makes me feel good. You know, it makes me feel good that it's waking some people up.
And I think a lot of that, and to your credit, you know, you weren't really being aggressive. You were asking a legitimate question. And as this thing went viral, and, you know, it took off immediately, I knew about you that day. You know, by the time I got home from work, I was seeing this stuff on my newsfeed. I'm like, man, he actually said that to that guy. Good gosh. Not you, but I'm talking about Joe Biden and the way you behaved. And I'm like, man, he's got to be crazy. So when we see stuff like this happen, and it was just exactly like you said earlier, it rips that mask off their face. It reveals who they really are. It reveals what they got in mind for this country. And I've said this a lot of times, you know, we can't take those folks who are supporting Donald Trump and are looking for Trump to, you know, to be reelected in 2020 this year, you can't take anything for granted. And that means, you know, whether it's Joe Biden, who it apparently will be, or if it's Bernie Sanders, doesn't really matter. You know, we can look at them, we can laugh, we can say, oh, man, ridiculous. They don't stand a chance. But you never know. At the same time, I think that the Democrats – and the news media, and I've said this a bunch of times, ever since, you know, what was it, like 20, 21 guys when this thing first started for the Democrats, they had like 21 candidates, and, you know, it was just a straight-up horse race. And we all got caught up in it. Like, these guys actually had a shot. And, again, we can't take anything for granted, but, you know, this wasn't a horse race. They're trying to herd these guys to the glue factory. They got these two swaybacks that are just beat, and that's what they're going to run Mr. Ed against Seattle Slough. They're going to run Festus from Gunsmoke's Mule. Yeah, they're going to run Festus from Gunsmoke's Mule against Seabiscuit, and it's just
right.
You know,
I mean, you gotta look around. You can look around just people in your vicinity, man. We got better people that are just around the block than what we have up here right now.
Well, and that's a sad thing. And, you know, I watch these guys on the news, and I know you do too, and all your friends do. And you look at them and you hear them. You know, Nancy Pelosi says stuff like, well, you know, we got to pass the bill to find out what's in it. And you're thinking to yourself, these are the people that are calling the shots in Washington, D.C. These are the guys that have the mm-hmm. majority of control over my life, over your life. And,
that's right.
You know,
that's
of course
who our representatives are. Yeah. People go in there and then they just go Republican or Democrat. But we can't do it anymore. We've got to be individuals.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that when it comes down to Republicans and Democrats, at least in Washington, D.C., there's, you know, it's just one party. It's just one big club. And,
yep, that's
you know,
what it seems like.
You know, you could just put them in a bag and shake them up. 10 Republicans, 10 Democrats, and not even look which one you pull out. And there's not going to be a dime's difference between any of them because they're all embedded. They're all entrenched. They're all making money for the most part. And that gets good to them once they've been there for a couple of terms. And so they... they focus on enriching themselves, and then whatever trickles down to their constituency, they'll be happy to take the credit for. And that's something on either side of the aisle. That's not necessarily Democrat, and definitely not necessarily Republican.
Yes, sir.
Has there been any other really long term effects from this thing? As far as I know, you're pretty popular. A lot of people want to talk to you and have you tell them about that day and what went on. But and I'm hoping that it's all positive. I'm hoping that there hadn't been anything negative, because you know these guys, once they get
90% of it's positive, yeah.
Okay, good, because there are a lot of people out there, you know, and again, this goes back to political discourse. I guess in the time of Facebook, or at least in the time of social media, people say things to one another through this conduit that I seriously, honestly believe they would never in their wildest dreams think of saying to someone face to face.
Yeah.
And that anonymity makes it really dangerous.
No, I agree. I completely agree.
So what's going to happen with you now that you're an internet superstar now? You're viral, man. You're bigger than the coronavirus.
Yeah, well, no,
dude.
I was for a second there. I didn't know that. I was at work all day. I come out and I was number one trending in the world over coronavirus. I was like, holy crap! But a pandemic like
man.
That, man, that's nuts. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. That's a lot of people are saying, you know, like, oh, we got your 15 minutes of fame and stuff like that. But I assure you and all of your listeners, this is just starting. I'm going to be traveling the country, guys. I'm going to be doing speeches all over the place, and we're gonna just now ramping up. I'll be getting my YouTube going, and we're going to push this envelope forward. They will not be taking our guns. I'm gonna do my darndest to make sure of it.
Well, Jerry, we're happy to hear about that. Have you got like a website you can give us now? I mean, have you gotten that far enough along in it to where you can talk about it?
It's in the middle of being developed right now.
Okay.
If you guys want to be on pace of what's actually happening, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all on Jerry Wayne, AR14. And
okay.
I would post on there everything that's new. I actually just got verified on Instagram, so that's pretty cool. I didn't even ask them for it. So I thought that was pretty cool, you know?
Excellent. Well, folks, we've been talking with Jerry Wayne, and this is the guy right here that put Joe Biden on the spot. Joe Biden didn't have an answer for him, and you know what? There were going to be, after this is all over with, Jerry, I think there are going to be the armchair quarterbacks and the heads, and everybody's going to look at this, and in the post game, they're going to sit down. And Joe's probably been told the bad news at this point that, you know, Donald Trump's been elected. And then the post game, they're going to look back at all the forced errors, all the errors, forced and unforced, and they're going to look back at each one of these things as the individual nails in Joe Biden's coffin, for his presidential coffin. And there's no doubt in my mind that scene between you and Joe Biden is going to be one of the ones, if not the fatal, was one of the ones that contributed to the death of this campaign. And the country owes you a debt, sir.
Oh, well, that's very admirable. I appreciate that. That's not, I assure you that wasn't my intention going in there. I just wanted to have some questions, you know. But at the same time, someone that wants to take away our rights is an enemy of the country, in my opinion. So I'm glad he's not going to make it. And if that's the case, if you guys consider me the nail in that coffin, I appreciate that.
Well, I think that you've played a role. I mean, Joe's done a lot of hammering himself throughout this campaign, and this was another example of it. But like I said, you know, you were spot on with a legitimate question. And what I would like to do, Jerry, is I'm gonna get you on Facebook here in just a little bit. We're working on that right now.
Sure.
I'm gonna keep in contact with you, and I want to make sure that we do what we can to help you promote your Second Amendment activities.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, man.
And we'll be looking forward to having you. Once you get everything up and running, and I know you probably got. Are you guys? What's the coronavirus situation up in your neck of the woods? Are you guys quasi-quarantined? Are you working? Are you staying home? What do they got you doing?
Well, a lot of things are shutting down right now. The plant I was working at shut down as well. So we are sitting at home, sitting tidy, which is actually good because I can work on this full time. You know, I got interviews, so many interviews all the time. You
right.
know, I'm trying to get every interview I possibly can. You know, I think because I'm not just doing the big time stuff. You know, I'm doing the little guys as well. I think that's where
we
I stem
appreciate
from.
It.
So I'm never going to forget that. You know, absolutely, I appreciate you having me on. And we're all in high hopes. You know, and we're staying active on this. You know, that we're in a war right now. And it's not just,
yeah.
it can't just be me. It's got to be every patriot out there. We got to do this together, you know?
Exactly. You know, it was one day, 63 million Americans said, you know what? I really don't like the way things are going, and we're going to change this. And that's exactly what's happened. And a friend of mine, Gary Benford, often makes a comment, if each one of us, you, me, Gary, all Trump supporters, all 63 million or so of us, if each one of us were to just flip one vote, find one guy,
yep.
one of your buddies, talk to him, you know,
that's a very
don't
good
have
way
to get
to
in arguments about it, but just, yeah, flip that one vote, and it's a tidal wave.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that's kind of an analogy I like to use, man. I'm just a ripple. I made a ripple in the water, and when I did that, it is compounding, and there is a tsunami now. I wish I could share with everybody what's happening on my social media. It is a tsunami, and we're taking it all the way up to the White House, guys.
Well, you know what? Here, once you get everything going, once you get up and running, we would like to have you come back on the program, and you can tell us exactly what's going on with that and share it with our listeners as well.
That'd be great. I'd be honored.
Jerry, I want to thank you so much for being here. I know you're a busy guy, and you know you graciously took – you know, about a half hour out of your time and talked with us and told us about that day and shared your memories with us. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back on here in the near future so you can let us know how things are going with the Second Amendment fight.
Perfect. I really appreciate it, man, and let's keep pushing the envelope.
Absolutely, Jerry. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Yep, you too.
All right. Jerry Wayne, ladies and gentlemen, that was you know what? Just a regular guy. Okay, he's out there working, doing his job, just like the rest of us. He's got bills, he's got cares, he's got woes. One simple question about the Second Amendment. I would say that Joe Biden loses his mind, but it's kind of sketchy as to whether he even actually had it with him that day. Oh my gosh. Well, let me see here. All this talking makes a man thirsty, and I gotta take a break. I gotta get something to drink. We will be back with more of a conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network right after this. Hey, everybody. Listen, back by popular demand, it's the chicken story. This is a story I drag out every so often, every couple of years, and it's one of my favorite stories. For those of you who don't know me, one of my main hobbies for the last 20-some years has been taking part in Civil War reenactments. I'm a Civil War reenactor. And I have a great bunch of guys that I do this with. Brian's Battery, we have our own cannon, big old full-size 3-inch ordnance rifle. And we go around to in West Virginia. We do about 8-10 Civil War reenactments a year. It's just a nice weekend thing to get away. We go out, kill a bunch of Yankees, have some fun, and then, you know, back to the routine work day. Well, about 1997, I was on my way to a Civil War reenactment in Bealington, West Virginia, way up in the northern part of the state. And at the time, I had this little 1995 Plymouth Neon, little five-speed scooter kind of car, and I had all my Civil War stuff. I got this full-size tent and these poles and everything and all my Civil War gear in this vehicle, and I'm going towards Bealington. Now, the way that I went was I went to Lewisburg, West Virginia, and then I'm cutting up through this area in Marlinton, West Virginia, and the road that I was traveling was two-lane blacktop just about the entire way. And it was some really pretty farmland because it ran along the Greenbrier River and then on up further north. But it was just kind of flat bottom land and off to the sides, you know, about a half mile, three quarters of a mile in either direction, you could see the mountains and the hills begin. It was just some really pretty bottom land. There's a lot of farmers out there. So I'm driving about 40, 45 miles an hour and just digging some tunes and thinking about running up here with my buddies and having a great time. And I see this something. I see something off in my peripheral over to the right. So I shoot a quick glance over, and it's a chicken. And what this chicken is doing is he's running. And he's running as fast as I'm driving. Now, I don't know how fast a chicken can run, or I didn't at that time, I found out. But I was going about 35, 40 miles an hour through this area. And the chicken was keeping up with me. Now, it was kind of like when I looked at it, it was kind of like a little rise on the other side of the road there. And the chicken was running. He was on the other side of this fence. And then all of a sudden, after about a minute or two, me watching this chicken, he kind of veered off to the right and shot down to this farm that I saw. And the road to the farm was about a quarter mile up the road, so I hit it. Do you know how fast the chicken can run? Okay, well, neither did I. So this one was going about 35 miles an hour, and I'm thinking, God, this must be like the $6 million chicken. So I pull in. I go in, and there's this old guy out there, and he's a farmer. I mean, he looks the part. He's a T-shirt and bib overalls that are all worn out and stained and straw hat, and had a little feed sack in his arm, and he was feeding some chicken. I pulled in, I waved at him, and went up, started talking to him a little bit, and I told him what I had seen. And he laughed and said, "Did it look like one of those over there?" And he pointed towards this kind of place in the chicken yard, the chicken range, that was kind of fenced off. And in that area there, that little 35-foot area or so, there was about a dozen. There were about a dozen chickens. And they did nothing really remarkable about them. They were just kind of all gaggled up together. And then I saw one or two of them kind of step away from the rest, and they had three legs. And then I looked, and I saw all that these chickens in that area had three legs. So I asked the farmer about it. And he told me that, it's a poultry farm. They're in the poultry business. So if you're ever curious about what happens to a chicken when they retire from laying eggs, well, you eat them. Or at least that's what they were doing. And so what they would do is they would sell the poultry, you know, to the local, what they didn't use, they would sell to the, their neighbors, people in the area. And what he said was that one of his sons had gone up to West Virginia University and then over to the University of Virginia and agricultural major, animal husbandry kind of thing, and they did some genetic stuff, some crossbreeding, some half-breeding, some just plain old regular breeding. Anyway, what they did is after
a number of years and trial and error, they were able to develop this chicken with three legs. And the reason they did that was because in the poultry business, there was such a demand for drumsticks, they never had enough. So this was the experiment. I'd never seen anything like this before, obviously. You know, I know a little bit about science, but I didn't know they were doing that. And so I looked at him, and I'm looking at the chickens, and I said, well, I've never seen anything like this. This is amazing. How do they taste? And he said, I don't know. We can't catch them.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm here all week. I'll be back on Thursday. Help your wait staff, guys. Okay? Help your wait staff. They're working hard. Well, I don't care what anybody says. I love that story, and I love hearing me tell it. James Bostic here with a conservative's perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here on LogTalkRadio.com. And we do this live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded version of the program. Of course, you know it goes out over Mojo 50 Radio, Mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you ought to be, because that's some of the very best libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. Man, let me tell you guys now, while I'm thinking about it, you wanna tune in this coming Thursday. And by the way, listeners, excuse me, I'm going to have to hit the... because I'm getting all choked up and emotional here. Just hang on a minute. But it's all right now. It's all right now. I'm over that. What I wanted to tell you. Number one, I haven't said it in a long time, and I'm really remiss about it, and I was just thinking about this the other day. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'm watching the numbers on everybody's watching the numbers. I'm looking at, you know, the number of listeners we have on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's steadily growing. We were really doing well when it was me and Mark together, and Mark's on his way back. He's going to be back here shortly. The way this COVID-19 thing and you know, lots of businesses are closing, or they're having to do some remarkably flexible things, and the line of work that Mark's in is no exception. He's got to work nights now, and you know, where he had been working days, nights were radio, and now nights are work. But as soon as this gets all squared away, Mark Hoffman is going to be back with us, and we are going to be happy. We're going to be happy to see him back. I miss the guy. We've been doing this for like 6 years now. It didn't seem like that. We started out with a guy named Bobby B. Singer. Bobby B. Singer had a couple of organizations, primarily WINN, the World Integrity News Network, and that's where Mark and I met. That was the first time I'd ever done live radio. Yeah, absolutely. I had done commercial radio, you know, a lot of the times. All that stuff is automated. They, you know, they call it canned, but it's all automated. And the days of a disc jockey in the smaller markets, yeah, okay, I guess. But if you're thinking about like it was in the 60s and 70s, and everything was, you know, live, and these guys came in and they did a shift, you know, where they were on the air talking about the weather, talking about the radio news, talking about whatever was going on. And I mean, it's just not like that anymore. It's just not. I did, with the technology that we had, which was, you know, broadcast quality. The equipment we had was broadcast quality, but I had a program that I did Monday through Friday on a contemporary Christian radio station a few years ago, and I would come in, and it was 5 to midnight, so that's 7 hours of radio and commercials and blah blah blah, yaggedy shmaggedy. Well, I could come in and have the program set up to where I see, you know, the song that has been played, and I'll hear about 2 or 3 seconds of that song, and then James Bostic here, Power 95.3, Mercy Me, and blah, blah, blah. And we go on. Tomorrow it looks like we're going to be this kind of weather. And then coming up now, we've got Cletus Take the Wheel. And you do this, and you can do 7 hours of radio, you know, in about an hour and a half, just goofing around. And that's what I did. And you know, it was like mass production, which was cool. Taught me a lot about you just got to keep it moving. You just got to keep it moving. If you can. Sometimes you flip a switch and the studio blows up and you can't keep it moving. There's nothing you can do to get back on the air. And getting on the air is critical because that's where your listeners are. But anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, I know what we're going to talk about. I don't know what we were talking about, but we were talking about that. Nancy Pelosi. Let's talk about Nan. According to the polls, the last ones that I looked at just before the show started, overall, and I know that this, you know what I think is really hurting people concerning the coronavirus is the massive level of much ado about nothingness about this whole thing. Am I trivializing it? No, I'm not trivializing it. People are dying, and that is never cool, whether it's coronavirus, whether it's SARS, whether it's H1N1, whether it's the swine flu, whether it's Legionnaire's disease, doesn't matter. You know, whether it's the average of 20,000 plus that die every flu season. Now, anybody that's listened to this show any time at all knows that I'm not a particularly smart guy. And that's the truth when it comes to a lot of this stuff. But I didn't live this long by being real stupid. So I did learn a few things. And one of the things I've learned is, you know, there's a flu season. By God, there is. And it happens fundamentally the same time of year every year. By God, it does. And last year, in our flu season, over 20,000 people died. Millions were infected. Now, I'm just talking about here in the United States. I'm not talking about anywhere else on the planet. Right here in America. Millions infected, 22,000 deaths. The elderly, little kids, young people who seemingly had nothing wrong with them at all would get the flu and then they would damn die. This has happened every year. Every year. And it's horrible. Every single time one of these, you know, somebody dies from something as needless as the flu, for crying out loud, it's a tragedy. We can put a man on the moon. You get the idea. So, having said those things, I want to say this. We're going to be okay. This coronavirus thing, as horrifying as they make it, as dreadful as they make it sound, is going to stop soon. Here in West Virginia, I really don't know how to explain it. And if you listen to our governor Saturday night, he doesn't know how to explain it either, apparently. But what's going on is we're in a kind of a self-imposed kind of quasi-quarantine here in the state. Barbershops are closed. Nail salons are closed. Is that right? Restaurants are only doing, they're only doing carry out. And gas stations are open. Banks are open. Grocery stores are open. I think hardware stores are open, but there's a lot of things that, that have been closed. And the idea is we need to keep to ourselves this virus like every other virus of its type, of coronavirus, is caught and contracted the same way. So you got to wash your hands. You got to cough into your elbow. You got to wash your hands again. You have to use Clorox wipes or some other method of keeping clean. Soap and water, which has worked really well for a long, long time. But, and I got into this discussion with my brother just the other day. A true man of science, my brother, and Alvin, sit tight. I'm going to get with you, man. I haven't forgotten about you. I see you on there. I'm just trying to coalesce this thought. We have a caller, which is rare. They have generated a great deal of fear. If we look simply at the mathematics of it, and I know, and there, people are going to be, well, it's a greater risk in this certain population, and we've got to watch the elderly because of the respiratory. Listen, dude, I'm from West Virginia. Coal miners wrote the Bible on respiratory ailments, and we have a very old population of retired and retiring coal miners, guys that have black lung disease. Or probably well on their way. So, yeah, these dudes get hit with something like this COVID-19, this China-originated viral infectious disease, COVID-China. They're going to get hurt bad. But even with those statistics, and there are places where, it could make some very serious inroads. Even with those statistics, everything I've seen says you get it, you got about a 1% chance, 1% in chance of dying from this mess. And we see this thing, they're putting restrictions in place. In some places, like it's a bubonic plague. They put these draconian measures in places like Los Angeles and New York, examples, and they're trying, they're just shuffling the homeless population around. And I would submit that the thing that's keeping this virus alive in these large metropolitan areas is your homeless population. Clearly, you've got some hygiene issues there, and they're all, they all stay tight and close together. It's like this shadow community. And think about San Francisco. Okay, let's add COVID-19 to the pooping and the peeing that's raging in San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi's district. Let me see if I can get my headphones jacked in here, man. And we got a caller. Alvin, you still there? Hi, Alvin.
Yeah,
how are you,
man? I'm somewhat okay. I just had a debate of a former friend, because he was trying to tell me about, how Donald Trump is racist and all this stuff. And
you believe that?
I don't believe it, because it's like he's doing more things in the black community than Obama ever did. And he's telling me he basically. I told him about the facts of the situation about helping. He did help out funding or whatever for helping him out with historically black colleges. He was hanging out with black people But now since he's turned Republican, he's a racist. And then a former friend, he just called me retarded. I'm like, why did you insult my intelligence? And I know how to speak Spanish, and I can speak two different languages. And I just cut him off because it's like liberals, he's basically a liberal, you know. You know, he talked about complaining about white supremacy and all that stuff. And just in the middle of this and telling me, because I'm getting ready to go back to the Dominican Republic for some other things to go over there. And he was telling me that, you know, which is true, that, you know, the airports are closed and they don't know if they're going to have flights or anything. They have to have flights. The industry, like to me, I know I'm all over the place, but to me, this situation between, I call her Nasty Pelosi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
my
gosh.
It's just like, dang, why are you wasting your time? And people are increasingly need help, you know, this coronavirus situation. Especially, I'm from California, and the LA area, and its homeless population is getting high because the cost of living is high. Even if you have a high paying job, you can't even you have to either commute an hour away from, even if it's an hour away, you have to even live with a roommate or something. So it's like, of course the population for those areas is going to be increased.
Mm-hmm.
New York and LA, it's like living in, it's like sardines living together. Now I'm in Texas now, but better state, but more conservative, but it's just,
You know, Alvin, I was thinking about, and that, you know, that was what I was just talking about before you and I started talking. They're not really, you know, they're restricting you, and they're restricting me, and they're restricting those folks that work in the food industry who are taking a beating. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the wait staff and the cooks, these guys, and, you know, and she is rejoicing, Alvin. She knows the pain that these people are going through. She knows the hurt, but it doesn't matter to her. She's rejoicing. She is so blinded by hatred for the president and you and I. They want to do this.
Yeah, to me, it's like that. And I don't know if you were divorced or ever divorced or have kids. It's like that baby mama. I don't know if you're divorced or not. It's like that baby mama that doesn't get over the situation that you're doing better. That's how the Democratic Party is. It's like,
I had
to look back and step back and put things in perspective and see what it really is. Take the stuff what people say from Republicans or Democrats. See everything that's in the middle. And once I start seeing things in the middle and take things that, then I'm like, you know what? Number one, I started doing my research about Democratic Party. Democratic Party actually rejected freedom of slaves. Number two.
Oh, yeah. They fought tooth and nail against it.
Lyndon B. Johnson actually enacted the war on poverty, affected the black community, and I mean particularly more the community in general, white community, everything. It affected our country ever since 1968 when LBJ enacted that war on poverty. It affected a lot of us, and now, you know, Donald Trump is going through everything opposite. Like, the unemployment rate is so low. I mean, hopefully Nasty Pelosi will get something done by the end of this. And once there's everything done, we're going to bounce back as ever. And I believe in my heart, in my soul, that Donald Trump's going to win 2020, because it's like nobody, Bernie Sanders not saying anything that convinced me. And I'm thinking neutral. I'm a very neutral person. When people go right, I go left. And I see, okay, Donald Trump, I can see through Donald Trump and his actions. What he said, he did. I don't care if,
exactly.
if he was a I don't care. To me, I don't care what people say, what he did in the past. I don't care. I look at the person, what he did right now. You could be a drug addict. You could be a racist. You could be a big – I don't care what you do in the past. The past, everybody makes mistakes. So you got to give that person – he is a human being just like I am and you are. So to me, in my – I look at people of who – what they've done, and if they say what they said and they do it, I respect you as a man, and I respect you. He got my vote, and I feel like, to me, they need to stop, because I feel like right now, in a sense, it feels like the Democratic Party knows that they can, this coronavirus can, they can, if they wanted to, they can get things done. And the coronavirus is not like HNN1 or SARS or bird flu virus. They just, the media is making it overly do everything, and now it's affecting the whole job industry, the airline industry. I'm not saying it's not, it's the coronavirus is not, is no joke, but I mean, at the same time, if you compare the numbers compared to these other diseases, it's not really what it really is.
Over 20,000 people last year, Alvin. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we lost. We 20,000 people lost their lives to just the regular annual flu season. And
so
I'm not saying
compare,
I agree with you.
Yeah.
This is not a joke either. I agree with you. There are certain populations that have to be protected. The elderly, for example. They're really prone because when they get this, then it opens them up to a whole cascade of other problems, and then that's what kills them. So they have to be protected.
But
I just don't see where it justifies the extremism that a lot of communities and a lot of places in the country are going through. And the thing also that I see is that there are people in power who are looking to exploit this so as to broaden their power base. Never let a good crisis go to waste. Isn't that what Rahm Emanuel said? And that's what we see the Democrats doing right here. Huh?
That's how I feel. Like, the Democratic Party, they trying to – what they're doing, they're trying to smear Donald Trump, everything in their power,
Trump
is doing – and I know the American people, and I know the American people is reading right through the Democratic Party. It's like, okay, they try to get what's his name, Bloomberg? They should, a lot of black people shot him down. Look at Bernie Sanders. Yeah, they do. Okay, he ain't doing nothing. He's like, oh, we get $15 an hour. You got in Texas, you got 15 jobs that's $15 an hour. So a lot of liberals, which pretty much California, New York, they're complaining because they're in a state that they pay high in taxes. Texas. Or I don't know about West Virginia. That's where you're from, right?
Right, I'm West Virginia.
Yeah, the Bible Belt states, they have no problems of any getting $15 hour jobs. When people complain about they got $15 hour jobs. You either do two things. You could probably move to Texas, or you could live down south. Oh, I don't want to live down south. I love my California. I love my New York. I love New York. I love this. I love that.
Good luck.
But don't be complaining. You should be complaining to your governor. Don't be blaming on Donald Trump. What did Donald Trump see? If any problems or any issues that's pertaining to jobs and jobs employment, you should be complaining to your governor. Right? See?
Absolutely.
You should be blaming to Gavin Newsom. Person from California, if they complain about there's no jobs, don't blame it on the president. Blame it on Gavin Newsom if they from New York, or they need to blame it on Cuomo, or
Andrew Cuomo.
Gavin Newsom, California, and Cuomo in New York. So you need to blame those governors because those are the ones that enacting these laws and regulations and what companies going to do, and they are highly regulated. Those states. And look at what's crazy is this is the craziest thing that got me upset. What, 2 years ago, what's her name? That young chick, that bartender, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
AOC?
Yeah, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, I call her AOC.
Right.
They had an opportunity to fix the jobs, have more job security, everything else. Had a good opportunity. In one of her districts. Amazon, yeah. Had an opportunity to fix everything, their infrastructure. 20,000 jobs. And then you probably have more jobs over there. Then you have more. And when you have more jobs, then people going to be getting more jobs. Then you have those small businesses can thrive because it looks nicer and everything. No, she turned it down. Because it wasn't enough for them. It's messed up. It's not good enough. Are you serious? A multi-billion dollar, you going to turn that down? And now a lot of companies are like, you know what? I don't want to do business in New York. The taxes are higher, everything else. Look at Toyota, right? It used to be in Torrance in California. Now they moved in Plano, Texas. Probably another hour away from me, from Fort Worth.
Right.
And their headquarters over there. So because the taxes are less. So I had to understand, like, in my journey, I know I'm going all over the place. I know you've got more to talk to. But one thing I've learned from thinking Democrat to Republican is I learned it took me all this time to realize that the economical in between the economics. I know, okay, yeah, Texas, you got more jobs, job opportunities. California, they don't have that much jobs because the taxes are getting high, and it is just is ridiculous. So to me, right now, it's just to me, I think they need to start getting rid of the ego pride from the Democrats, and they need to come together like they said they're going to do bipartisanship because a lot of people, they need this. I think Republicans are like the most mature party right now. They being cool. They got their stuff together. They didn't attack them.
They have a better understanding of how these people are hurting. And they care. Nancy Pelosi doesn't care, Alvin. She knows. Okay, McConnell brought it up again today. They shot it down. So this is the third time, and it was after the third time she fined 1,400 pages of pulled pork in this baby that was supposed to, I mean, unbelievable stuff. You know, all their, you know, money towards all their ideological pet projects, and we know what those all are. But finally, it got to the point where even her own party said, you're going to get us killed. Take this stuff out of there, and let's work to get. But here's what's going to happen, Alvin, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to ask you, your prediction for the Democrats overall on the day after Election Day 2020. They wake up.
My prediction.
And what's up?
My prediction of 2020, I think the Republicans are going to have the House and the Republicans are going to have the Senate like they had before. Because right now, the American people, I mean, I'm thinking mutual. I'm thinking the common person, not the liberal, not the worker, the workers. The workers going to realize this guy is saying what he's saying. What's going on? And they're going to do their research and trying to figure out the person that people that's going to vote for their what they done. They're going to look at the Republicans that we need to go the House is going to have Republicans and the Senate. They're going to have it back because right now it's like the squad is not, they're not really like professional. They're not being productive. No. They just want to take resources out of the government's money. Whereas this is a very important, not just collecting money and, oh yeah, the welfare. This is a legitimate welfare right now that people need right now because this is a virus. We don't want that to be increased. So this is important welfare, not, okay, we're going to use welfare for a year. No, this is a welfare that we need so we can get back to work.
Well, and the thing of it is, and a lot of people, you raise an interesting point. I see a lot of the meme heads out there, the meme mouths. They'll have these pictures, you know, and they'll say, well, looks like conservatives are pretty cool with socialism now because you got this universal. And what they're doing, you're right, they're wanting to equate it with a universal and perpetual income when that's not what's going on here. These businesses, these restaurants, these barbershops, these nail shops, these service industries that are closed now are closed at the orders of the government on some level.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
The business owners didn't have – this is through no fault of the business owners. They haven't been negligent. They haven't mismanaged. The building hasn't burned down. The place hasn't been robbed. The government shut them down. And I think that in a situation like this, it is incumbent upon the government to make these people as whole as they can because it was the government's responsibility. And
yeah.
they have to realize the economic hit – that it's gonna bring about. So yeah, I'll be happy to take that $1,000 check, and I know there are a lot of other people out there that'll be happy to take it because they need it. They've been deprived of what they could have otherwise made by the government.
Yeah, for me, for example, like I'm a disabled veteran. I did 6 years in the Army. They messed me up So now I have entitled to those benefits. A lot of people don't deserve those benefits, especially those people that was born here and everything. And let me tell you this about citizenship and all that. When I was in Dominican Republic, I was there for 2.5 years last year. I just came back here. They treated me if I had money in my pocket. If I said, you know what, can I get a loan of a car? Even if I had money from the government, you have to be a Dominican citizen. Okay.
Wow.
So what's the difference between a person that needed, they want their, and then top of that too, a lot of Haitians that they migrate to Dominican Republic, they be eliminating Haitians left and right. Let me see your ID. You don't have a passport ID. You don't have Haitian ID or anything or whatever. They'll put them back to the truck. But they hopped over the fence of Dominican Republic. So it's nothing wrong with being a nationalist.
No.
Because that's your country.
And you know what, Alvin,
I'm going over there.
I think that and more than seeing Donald Trump, really, as a conservative or a liberal, Republican, different, any of those things, that's what I see Donald Trump as a nationalist, and in a way that comforts me because he's not interested in sacrificing this country at the altar of his political ideology. He wants to make this country better, and in doing that, he knows that circumstances and situations have to be created to where you can prosper and I can prosper independently of government. He wants all Americans to do well. And that's about all that.
Yeah.
I've got to move on. Alvin, thank you so much. This is a terrific call, and I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you listening to the program.
Okay, I'm still listening to you afterwards, so I appreciate giving me the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you very much for calling in, Alvin. I'm going to put you back in there. Enjoy it, buddy. That was a good call. Articulate, smart guy. I like that. And you know, he talked about, Alvin was talking there too, and I'll touch on this about political discourse. We got a few minutes left. Because he had a difference of opinion over Donald Trump and disagreed with somebody that called the guy a racist, it busted up a friendship. Hopefully just temporarily. But you know what? That can happen. And I know from bitter firsthand experience, one of the hard lessons I learned about Facebook in those early days, everybody was saying everything. And it brought me in a long time to a part of the ways that we're still trying to about halfway rehab. I mean, that was a painful thing. And I learned some valuable lessons about that. But that's, you know, you got to find some kind of middle way to get this political discourse. Now, there are going to be people that are just going to be so unreasonable, they're going to be so extreme, that they're not going to listen. They're not going to listen. There was a guy, there was a radio dude I used to listen to, Jerry Doyle. I don't know if any of you guys know Jerry Doyle or not. He passed away a few years ago. Terrific dude. He was a TV actor, and he was on a real popular sci-fi show in the back in the 90s and the big 2000s, Babylon 5. Anyway, and then his show went on. He went on to do other things, but he was a conservative guy, and he went into radio. And those years before he passed away, he was out in Vegas doing conservative radio. And he said, you know, one of the things that we have the biggest problem with is, you know, it's an 80-20 mix, and you have 80% of folks will be like me and Alvin. You got 80% of them. They're going to be center right, center left. And you can have 10% on either side of the extremes, the radicals on the right and the radicals on the left, and those are the power mad SOBs that want to control every facet of your life and do what they want to do, and we can't have that. And so that's where we're strongest in the center. We're strongest in the center. No question about it. 60% of people approve of how the president is handling the coronavirus issues. 60%. More than that, disapprove of how Congress and the Democrats have screwed this over. And again, like I said, it was horrifying. If I got that clip, Tom Cotton. Where are you, Tommy? Tommy boy. Come on now, I know you're in here, dude. Maybe I put that under Tom. T for Tom instead of T for Cotton. I bet you guys didn't know that my daytime gig is working in the school system, did you? It is. Ah, Tom Jones. Nope, that's not it. Tom Cotton. Here he is. He just shreds this pork that Nancy Pelosi put in this thing. This is great.
1,400 pages. It's almost three times longer than our legislation, by the way. To give you a sense of what might be in that bill, because let me tell you, she's not hiding the good stuff in her bill. I don't have 1,400 pages here, but I do have a few pages. Let's just go through what is a priority for Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats as they dither while Americans die.
Ooh,
corporate board diversity.
I like that.
The Democrats want to impose quotas for race and sex on corporate boards. I know they want to do that for a long time. Is that going to stop anyone from getting sick?
No.
The coronavirus?
No. Uh-uh.
There's another one. Bailing out the Postal Service. Wiping
what?
All the debts that the Post Office has towards the Treasury. Another issue we've been debating for a long time. Postal Service needs relief. And I greatly respect and praise the hard work of the men and women who are still delivering the mail. But is a survival package for the coronavirus the right time to be talking about Postal Service debt to the Treasury? Oh, here's another one. $10,000 minimum of student loan forgiveness across the board. Another ideological wish list item for the Democrats. What does it have to do with stopping a pandemic, especially when Donald Trump has already waived student loan payments for Americans who are affected by this terrible pandemic?
Yeah, Nancy.
Early voting mandated in every single state.
Thanks, Alvin.
The same kind of early voting that almost doomed the Democrats' favorite presidential candidate, Joe Biden, for whom Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer worked tirelessly to beat their colleague, Bernie Sanders. Oh, combine that with same-day registration. Every single state has to register voters on same day. So now they want to pile election rules on a bill that's designed to stop a pandemic? Election rules written by the same partisan geniuses who couldn't even count their own votes in the Iowa Democratic caucus. Here's a good one, too. airline carbon emission offsets. Every airline that benefits from these programs, which is probably going to be all of them, has to go carbon neutral by 2025. Gee, it's going to be pretty amazing feat of engineering to get jet engines that you can plug into the wall and then fly across the continent.
Well, have you got an extension cord?
Democrats have a lot of faith in American ingenuity. I wonder if that'll apply, by the way, to the private planes that Nancy Pelosi and her family flies in, or all their buddies in Hollywood. What about this one?
Or her government.
Every airline has to tell you on every single flight what the greenhouse gas emissions of that flight are. So you get your departure time and your seat number and your gate number, and oh, by the way, how many greenhouse gas emissions your plane is going to have. What is that going to do to help a vitally important and devastated industry get back on its feet?
I just hope they have enough to keep it in the air.
Subsidizing retirement plans for community newspaper employees. Look, this has been a long-standing debate in Congress. It almost sank the retirement reform bill last year. And here it is again in a bill designed to stop the pandemic.
Tommy. You're excited.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding. Slow down.
$15 an hour minimum wage.
Okay.
Unfortunately, millions of Americans are learning that the true minimum wage is zero. When you lose your job because of a global pandemic that is killing your fellow citizens, and our elected leaders won't even have a debate on a bill. Here's a beauty, too.
All right.
Mandating that federal public employee unions get paid for the union work they do. So that means you, as a taxpayer, will pay federal bureaucrats when they're doing work not for you, the taxpayer, but for their unions. Again, is that going to stop the pandemic?
Ixnay.
I could go on and on and on. The Democrats' bill is 1,400 pages, after all.
Yeah.
But the point is this. There is a good bill, a bill that was negotiated in good faith over the weekend with many Democrats, no matter what they say, that they are now blocking, that they will not even start debate on because of ideological wish list items like those.
And they don't care who they hurt. They have never cared who they hurt. And they don't care now. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of details, but due to the contractual nature of my work, I'm one of the blessed ones. And I understand completely how lucky, how incredibly lucky I am that I'm not working in a job that, you know, that's people are hurting. I see it every day. And I come from a part of the country where economically, you know, we've been hurting for a while. The last administration's war on the fossil fuel industry was devastating. And when you add to that the opioid epidemic that took place, we were practically, Southern West Virginia, practically ground zero for the opioid epidemic that has swept throughout the country. It's been a scourge throughout the coal belt, through Kentucky and Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, and you know, parts of Ohio and Pennsylvania, where it's awful. So, you know, we know a little bit about pain and hurting. And they don't care. They do not care. How many waitresses, and I know it sounds like I might be stereotyping, and I don't mean to, but, you know, the thing about stereotypes, the reason you're stereotypes is because you see a lot of people that fit that description, hence the term stereotype. God. But anyway, how many single moms you know in the waitress business? Seriously. And it's on them. It's on them. Okay, maybe they got one kid, maybe they got a couple, and maybe they got a couple disinterested baby daddies that left them high and dry or aren't there or whatever. Or maybe they are there. Maybe they're working and trying, but they're struggling. And then something like this happens, and Pam loses her job because the restaurant she's working at's got to shut down because all they can do is carry out. And, well, we don't need a whole lot of wait staff for that. Hang in there, honey. Maybe this will be over with in about 3 or 4 weeks. 5 weeks. Do you know the hurt that can get on people? I've been broke before, man, and I know how crushing it can be. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, I know that, and I understand it. And it's a terrible, terrible place to be. And it pisses me off that you got clowns like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, son of a, and any of the Democrats in the House, and said, we just pick them, doesn't matter who they are. You know, they're happy. They're happy to hold this up because they think this is a way to put a shiv in the president's ribs, and they're laughing about it. They don't care that it's hurting you. They don't care that it's hurting Pam and Troy, little Troy Jr. They don't care. Doesn't mean anything to them. They want these, you know what? Get them on government assistance. We'll take care of them. Have them fill out these papers. We'll give them a little bit of nothing. Don't worry about a job. Don't worry about your dignity. Don't worry about being able to support yourself, to take care of yourself, to look after yourself and those people that are important to you. Nah, just let the government do it. So much the better. These people are evil. You understand me, America? Evil. Look at Nancy Pelosi. Look at that mug. Look at that Botoxed, alcoholic, pickled. Ugh, God. And not just Nancy. I'm just using her. I mean, Schumer, Schiff, Jerry the Jowl, any of these idiots in the Democrat Party. They don't care. It'll probably take another couple of weeks. Now that she's stood down and she's backed up off of this and saying they're not going to pursue it, this will be a couple of weeks. They'll drag it out through legislation, and then finally, you know, it'll be signed by the president, and then hopefully they can go ahead and start with the first of these, you know, this series of two relief checks, and people are going to need it. And I don't think it's going to take that long for the economy to come back. Alvin was spot on when he said, like a lot of people have said, the American people see through this. And it doesn't matter what Brian Stelter says. It doesn't matter what Rachel Maddow says. It doesn't matter what Lawrence O'Donnell says. You know, these guys, they're speaking in a bubble. They're all just sitting in a barrel talking amongst themselves in some kind of echo chamber. And as soon as someone says something, you know, derogatory or defamatory about Trump or Trump supporters or wishing that, you know, Trump's, you know, Melania Trump would get COVID and I'm guessing die. But probably not immediately. They would probably want to see her die a slow, lingering, painful death while they giggle about the idea. Hey, I think we're probably going to go ahead and wrap it up right here, 27 minutes after the hour. And if I keep on going, we're going to have to go into extra innings, and I'm kind of tired, so we're not going to do that. Thanks, Mr. Jerry Wayne, for being our guest and talking. Thanks, Alvin, for calling in. That was a great conversation there. I appreciate that tremendously. ACP is heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And we are also heard in our recorded version Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be. It is the very best of libertarian and conservative. Thank you, Penelope. 90 seconds left of libertarian and conservative talk radio. It's all the time we got. We will be back on Thursday. Our guest, Leslie Cruzan-Milwee. A horrifying story. You've heard of Juanita Broderick. You've heard of Monica Lewinsky. You've heard of who knows how many ladies that Bill Clinton creeped on, and Thursday's going to be no exception. Happened when he was governor in Arkansas. And it's I admire this woman for her courage. It is a powerful story, and we're going to get to hear it Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Conservatives Respected, Patriot Nation Radio Network. That's all the time we got. God bless you. God bless America. We'll talk to you Thursday. Lord willing, and the river don't rise right here. Taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. You guys take good care of yourself. Stay safe. We'll see you Thursday.